The Poker Edge with Phil Gordon on ESPNRadio.com. Your source for the latest poker news. Now, here's your host, Phil Gordon.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Phil Gordon, and this week we have on the author of Positively Fifth Street and a new book. It's Cowboys Full, the story of poker. It's a definitive history of America's favorite pastime. Jim McManus will be joining us on the show, and it'll be good to catch up with Jim, see what the poker world has been doing for him, and talk to him about his new book. We also have tons of news items to cover, so let's get right to it. Here's the news with Andrew Feldman.
The ESPN Poker Club headlines with ESPN.com's Andrew Feldman.
Feldman, Wyman, how were your holidays?
Full of food.
Same here.
How are yours?
Gaining some weight?
No, maintain, don't gain. That's the slogan here at ESPN.com.
That's exactly right. I've got a big weight loss bet myself, and I managed to somehow break even over Thanksgiving.
Do you? What's the bet?
It's big, and it's with a dear friend of mine, John Middlehauser. He had to lose 30 pounds. I had to lose 20. I've got 2 pounds to go, and I think he's drawing dead.
Wow. Yeah, I should probably do that bet. Wyman, you want to do weight loss bet?
I'm in.
You weigh like, what, 110?
Dude, I weigh like 215.
I'll take the under in a big way.
Dude. Did you guys ever tally up our World Series bets?
Yes. Well, hang on. You and Andrew or the last one with Lon?
All of them.
You and Andrew, we never did. We're waiting for a listener to do that. We will give away. What are we going to give away to our listener?
I have a medium full-tilt poker hoodie.
Medium full-tilt poker hoodie. And what are you throwing in, Phil?
I'm going to throw in a copy of Cowboys Full, the story of poker by Jim
Mass. Okay, so whoever goes through the podcast of the November 9, all the November 9, and gets us all the predictions from Andrew and Phil and pronounces a winner with evidence will get those two great gifts.
And let's be serious. If I get crushed, I really don't want to see anything. So so feel free to just disregard exactly what Sean Wyman just said.
There you go.
Anyway.
So, Andrew, what do you got in the news this week?
Phil, we tried something new at ESPN.com. There is nothing tougher in the world than saying who is the best poker player, right? I mean, we could always say Ivy, but time you need some proof, right?
Sure.
So what we did is I got a panel of 7 poker industry members, and we had everybody rank their poker players. And for the first time ever, we came up with ESPN's current top 10. With no surprise, Phil Ivey's at the top. With some surprise, Evgeny Timoshenko is at the bottom. It was a very interesting experience, but Phil, if you could give me your top 5 players right now, who do you think it would be?
Top 5.
You gave me top 3.
Is it cash and tournament?
It's everything. Live, everything. Online, cash, tournaments.
Live, online. Okay. I'm going to go with Phil Ivey.
Okay.
I will go with, I'm not going to do it in order, but here are my next 4. Daniel, Patrick Antonius, Tom Dwan, and wow.
Well, do you want to know? You could stop right there because of those are the consensus top 4 on ESPN.com right now.
Good.
However, the rest of the list gets a little interesting, and I highly recommend everybody to check out ESPN.com and look at the top 10. And, of course, weigh in our comment section or email us at poker@ESPNradio.com and let us know just how off we are.
Well, who are the last 6?
Well, I was going to tease it and see if everybody would go to ESPN.com. But if you really must know, here's the order.
Our listeners want to know.
Our listeners want to know, then we're going to give it to them. Phil Ivey received 6 first-place votes. Patrick Antonius, Daniel Negreanu, Tom Dwan, Barry Greenstein, Jason Mercier, Jeffrey Lissandro, Elke, Phil Galfond, and Evgeny Timoshenko.
Interesting.
What name am I missing on there, Phil?
Phil Gordon.
Correct. I am missing Phil Gordon on there. However, this is the current rankings right here and now, Phil.
Alan Cunningham.
Alan Cunningham received some votes but did not crack the top 10.
That is a mistake.
That might be a mistake, but hey, we asked 7 industry professionals to answer their opinion. Mm-hmm. That's what we got. Maybe he'll be on the January rankings.
There you go. All right.
All right. The Treasury and Fed announced last Wednesday that the UIGA implementations have been delayed until June 1st. Exactly. Woohoo. The Poker Players Alliance and other supporting groups now have 6 more months to prove that poker does not fall under the unlawful internet gaming category. We kind of expected this was going to happen, a last-minute delay. The PPA now is going to have its handful. They had meeting today on Capitol Hill trying to talk about the pros and cons of regulating and legalization. And after watching it, it's still kind of in the air to me. I don't think that we gained a lot of ground today.
Well, it's certainly not a lock, but anytime they're taking it seriously enough to have hearings on Capitol Hill, that's a good thing. And you know, we know that they're busy doing a lot of other very high priority things, but I think this is actually going to make some progress. And I think, you know, come the first 2 or 3 months of 2010, we're going to really know where we stand.
So do you want to change your our wager that we made in the last show, whether or not poker would be legalized or regulated in 2010 or 2011?
I do not believe that it will, but I hope that I'm wrong.
Okay. How many hands do you think you've played in the most during one day?
Wow. Probably 14 hours at two tables at a time, so 120. I don't know. Let's call it 16,000.
Okay. Well, we have a new world record holder. And Phil, you are he has you dominated by over 3 times.
Yeah, I'm sure.
50,470 hands in 21 hours, and a player named Joe Ingram won, became the new world record holder for playing the most hands online in one day. But now here's the kicker. Did he win or lose, and if so, by how much?
What stakes was he playing?
The lowest he could play was 10 cent, 25 cent.
I'm going to guess that he won.
Okay. Any amount? I mean, 50,000 hands to be a 50, winner?
50,000. Yeah, I would say, let's call it, let's assume that he was playing 25 cent, 50 cent, two, three big blinds, an hour per table. I don't know. Let's call it $2,000.
$800.
Okay.
Still,
close enough.
Still to have the new world record and $800 in your pocket, that's not bad.
Yeah, but it's a $40 an hour burn rate, right? Or, you know, earn rate.
Well, 21 hours.
Oh, 21 hours. I thought he played 24. Okay. That's not bad.
Not bad at all. All right, in the last show we spoke about a guy named Isildur One. Well, we still haven't figured out who he is.
But no one knows who he is.
But according to Bluff Europe, he is not Victor Blom, which has been the primary rumor going around. What we do know is that he's been running pretty poorly lately, and that he is now down online after being up nearly 7 million a few weeks ago. These swings and full tilt are unbelievable, and I heard that you have some very interesting inside information after speaking with Patrick Antonius.
Well, I did talk to Patrick today, and we're going to try to get him on a future episode of the Poker Edge. But, you know, I had a long conversation with Patrick today just about this. And, you know, he is very impressed with the guy. He thinks his no-limit game is better than his PLO game, but he is very, very good at both variants. One thing that I did not know about this challenge is that they've made it a rule that you must raise pot on the button.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can't limp.
So this
is
an official challenge between the two.
Well, basically, this Isildur One sets the rules for each engagement, and the current rules that he's instituting are: you got to play 4 tables at once, you got to play deep, and you have to raise pot on the button. So that's kind of what they're working on right now. But this kid, whoever he is playing 8 tables at once, 3 against Ivy, 3 against Antonius, and 2 against Juan. I mean, that's pretty sick.
Come on, easy competition.
Well, his game selection certainly
is terrible.
could stand some improvement, right?
However, as a poker player, you want to prove that you're the best in the world by beating the best in the world.
Well, you know, and Patrick, you know, was very blunt. The guy has a tremendous amount of talent, a lot of heart. He's impossible to read. He changes his game up better than just about anyone in the world, according to Patrick. And, you know, Patrick is a little flummoxed.
Well, Antonius hasn't had a very good month, to be honest. He was up and down. I mean, he won the biggest spot in online poker history at $1.3 million. But it seemed like Isildur really just got the best of him at times, and at other times, he was able to run Isildur over. Is that just to be expected against these two? I mean, we don't really know anything else about Isildur One besides the fact that he's very aggressive and has incredibly deep pockets.
Well, and I think that really is the key. He's got to have deep pockets to be playing this game. I mean, Patrick said today, when I talked to him, he thinks you need $100 million in your bankroll to be playing the game that they're playing. So suffice to say that there's not a poker player out there that's playing those games that has that sort of bankroll they are all at risk of ruin, and it's just a matter of time until one of the big guns that's playing this game goes completely flat broke.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. The rumors are your new team, Full Tilt Pro, Tom Dwan, has had an extremely tough month, an extremely tough year. How deep are his pockets right now?
I don't really know. Of course, I don't know Tom personally. I'm looking forward to getting to know him as the newest member of Team Full Tilt, but, you know, no one can sustain the kind of losses that he sustained at the hands of Isildur One and feel good about it. I mean, you know, his bankroll has to have taken a serious hit, and, you know, I've seen him play as low as 50 and 100. When's the last time you see Tom Dwan playing that low?
I don't know if ever. I mean, I just was trying to figure out. I remember looking at Dwan's profile on High Stakes DB, and I'm actually going to look at it right now. He is down. Look at this number. He's down $6.3 million in 2009. And,
yeah,
and most of it has come over the last month and a half.
Well, it definitely seems like this guy's got his number. And, you know, according to Patrick, you know, he's got the game that can take this guy down. Who knows? But it is good to see that Tom has essentially, you know, trying to rebuild his bankroll by playing some smaller stakes games. You know, like I said, at the rate that these guys are playing and the stakes these guys are playing, someone's going broke. I don't know who it's going to be, but someone's going broke and down in flames in a big way. And it's not because they're a bad player. It's just that the variance in the game that they're playing is just so sky high. And the stakes that they're playing are just astronomical. I mean, you know, it's not a 500-1,000 game. It's 500-1,000 with a mandatory 3,000 on the button.
And then it's always 9,000, then it's 27,000. And
9 and 27 and 81 and then, you know, whatever.
Calling five bets and you're shoving for 100,000 on the flop, and it's crazy.
Yeah, but it is entertaining to watch. And, you know, as always, the highest stakes games in the world are at Full Tilt Poker. Come on over and take a look. You will definitely be entertained.
Nice plug, Phil.
Thank you.
One other person I want to talk about is Brian Townsend. What an incredible comeback. I mean, a lot of people had questions about Townsend over the last couple of years, and he's just proven to be on top of his game once again right now.
Well, Townsend had the right idea. He went back and rebuilt his swing. You know, I mean, kind of like Tiger. After Tiger won every major in the book and, you know, he was on top of the world, he basically went and retooled his swing, and that's exactly what Townsend did. And it doesn't surprise me.
$4.4 million in 2009.
It doesn't surprise me at all. He's a very, very bright guy, and, you know, it's just a matter of time before he figured it out again. And let's hope that he can hold on to it this time, because I've got nothing but nice things to say about the guy. I think he's a class act. I really like the way he presents himself, both in person and in his blog, and I think he's a testament to the game.
Is there one player out there that you've got your eye on that you've seen at these high-stakes tables?
Well, you know, it seems to me like Ivy is holding all the money. And, you know, who said it? It was, Eric Seidel. I was, about 5 years ago, I was hanging out with Eric. We were drinking a beer, and, you know, Eric said something along the lines like, "We're all just holding Phil Ivy's money. The contest is to see who can hold on to Phil Ivy's money the longest."
Nice.
And, that certainly seems to be the case here. I mean, you know, you're looking at a Durr to Isildur to Phil Ivy transfer, essentially, you know. Maybe Phil couldn't get it from Durr, but Phil's going to get it from Isildur, who gets it from Durr. And, you know, it's just amazing to watch these games and the swings.
Now, we all love to watch these games. The question is, what is going on through their heads saying, "I need to play at this level all the time"? Maybe just the fact that, you know, I don't have that mindset of, "Hey, I'm going to go play for a couple million bucks tonight."
Yeah, they all think they've got the best of it. Someone's wrong, but they all think they've got the best of it.
Absolutely. That's crazy.
Anyway, once again, come and check it out. It's fascinating to watch, and there's no sign that it's going to slow down anytime soon.
Until one of them goes broke.
There you go, and we'll be right there to report all the news. If you do see a couple of hands that you'd like to comment on, send them to us. You can always email us at poker@espnradio.com. And tell us what you think about these online games and the big Isildur One and Patrick and Phil and Dwan action. We'd love to know what you think about those games. And, of course, we will read the best of your emails live right here on the Poker Edge on ESPN Radio.
And if you are Isildur, let us know.
Yeah, we'd love to know who you are. Come on the show. You can still remain anonymous. Just come on and talk to us a little bit.
Yes.
I'm sure he listens to the podcast. That's where he got his poker edge.
Obviously. So, hold on. Before we get to Jim McManus, it is the holiday season, and you're going to have a kid soon, so we're not really sure when our next show is going to be. But
yeah.
What is the perfect poker player's gift this year?
Well, I think the perfect poker player's gift. Well, obviously, I'm going to have to put in a plug for Cowboys Full, The Story of Poker by Jim McManus. I think that'd be a great gift to get a poker player.
Even if you're not a reader. I am not a reader. I enjoy this book.
Yeah. Well, you're not a reader. Wow. How about a Mac laptop?
Okay.
They're so much better for everything than the Windows boxes. I don't know. I haven't tried Windows 7, but I'm just a huge fan of Apple products now. And, you know, I think that if you're looking around at your favorite poker player and you're trying to figure out what to get them a computer that actually works.
Did you not like Microsoft these days or what?
I really don't.
As I sit here typing on my PC.
Exactly.
So
that's my plug for Apple. You got any ideas?
I mean, I was thinking of more poker-oriented stuff. I mean, like,
okay.
Everybody kind of already has the chips, the tables.
Yeah.
The books are kind of... They've reached their peak. You know what would be kind of cool? If you got a really good friend in the family, send him to a poker camp. Get him a private lesson.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. And, in fact, there are some private lessons, if you're interested, that I've donated to preventcancer.org. It's the Bad Beat on Cancer. If you're interested in a private lesson from me over the phone, that's the best I can do unless you can fly to Vegas. I'll be happy to meet you personally. Go to preventcancer.org and buy a 30-minute or an hour-long lesson. It's not cheap, but the advice you get could save you hundreds of thousands of dollars over the course of your lifetime.
So, that's it. I wasn't even setting you up for that. I had no idea you were doing that.
Yeah, I've been doing it for a couple of years, and I've given literally hundreds of lessons over the phone and otherwise. So,
all right, other gift ideas I have. I love the Flip Mini. I think that's awesome. I think that it has nothing to do with poker, but those HD Minis are really cool. And if you are a reader, go check out the Kindle.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Kindle is a great gift. All right, so let's move on. Great job with the news as always. And now it is time to bring on a good friend of the show. He's been with us before. He's the author of Positively Fifth Street. He is a final table participant in 2000 at the World Series of Poker. And he's got a new book all about the history of the game. Welcome to the show. And the author of Cowboys Full, The Story of Poker. Welcome, Jim McManus.
So happy to be here with you guys.
Jim, I got to tell you, I started reading this book a couple of days ago, and it is absolutely fascinating. I've been a big fan of yours since Positively Fifth Street came out. I thought that that was really one of the defining moments in the boom of poker. And, you know, it's great to see you follow it up with such a definitive work like The History of Poker.
Well, I don't know if it was a definitive work, but it happened to come out the same month that the WPT started broadcasting with the whole card cameras. That was in April of 2003, and then in September and October, ESPN brought us the Moneymaker World Series with the whole card cameras. So 2003 was a big year for poker, as you guys know.
Yeah, your timing could not have been better. You know, not only did you make the final table, but having the book come out and right at the boom, I mean, you had to sell... How many copies of that book did you sell, if you don't mind?
It's a state secret, but I did buy a big house with it.
Over a million.
By now, something like that.
Yeah, well,
that's
not bad. In the publishing world, that's absolutely astounding. Suffice to say that, you know, Cowboys Full, The Story of Poker, just came out about 3 weeks ago?
November 3rd.
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago, and, you know, the poker market for books is not the same as it was in 2003.
You know, there is a point of diminishing returns. There's so many outstanding books about how to play, and that's one of the reasons that so many of the young kids are able to compete, not only compete, but dominate the older, you know, the guys my age and Doyle's age. Not that I was ever playing at that level, but the information, the high-powered advice, you know, the mathematical precision, books like yours, Gus's, certainly Harrington's book has just made it so easy to get information. But at the same time, there's hundreds and hundreds of other books out there, and the market has begun to be glutted, probably at least a little bit.
Suffice to say, the poker market is pretty much dried up for books, and yet you've invested what seems to be an incredible amount of time in this book. What was the real drive behind writing this book?
Well, when I'm writing Positively Fifth Street, I wanted to get some poker background, the history of the game, not only Vegas and Benny Binion, but going back a little bit further. And I was pretty surprised to discover that there was no single book that covered most or all of the history of poker. So around that time, my editor and my publisher and I figured out I might be the right person to write that history. And I kind of jumped into it back in 2002.
You were the one who took on this responsibility to write this book, and you've gotten such positive feedback. Looking back in the whole process, what has been your favorite story that you've learned or that you've enjoyed writing about?
I was pretty surprised at how many presidents and generals and judges had played. We all knew that the outlaw crew, the cheaters, the regular folks at kitchen tables played, but the extent to which it determined Civil War military strategy, you know, the poker players on the North and the South, seven presidents who fought in the Civil War come out, take those kinds of bluffing and money management skills into the White House, and then in the 20th century, so both Roosevelt's, Truman, Eisenhower, Nixon, the extent to which it has wended its way into the highest levels of policy and nuclear deterrence in during the Cold War.
Well, along those lines, we've seen so many people play it over the years. It has truly become one of America's biggest pastimes. How do you feel personally about when people say poker is just a passing fad?
Well, I mean, if you go back to the beginning, very few things happened in the United States that didn't parallel the development of poker. I mean, poker arrives in the country almost exactly the same time that the country itself expands. You know, the Louisiana Purchase in 1803. Poker is part and parcel with our history, the discovery of the West, and it's played in too many free market democracies besides ours to even... The idea that it's not going to be played anytime soon seems I'm unpersuaded by that.
I think the best testament to that is actually the paragraph that you wrote at the very end of the book. I hate to skip the whole beginning to go right to the end, but I found the very last paragraph of the book to speak almost exactly to that point. You got a copy handy?
I do.
We're going to get a reading from Jim McManus.
Here we go. Whatever the variant, what used to be mainly a cheating contest is now, for better or worse, at the heart of our on-again, off-again romance with market democracy. More than politics, warfare, business, or physical sports, poker has become the arena in which men and women of every race and background compete on the most equal footing. In a single generation, the World Series has crowned champions from the United States, China, Iran, Vietnam, Ireland, Spain, Australia, Laos, Norway, Indonesia, and Denmark. No other arena is nearly as inclusive. America has long been a melting pot, and its favorite card game, some say its national pastime, has become a sturdy crucible in which folks from all over the planet find themselves welcome contenders.
As I said, that's almost exactly what you were saying before. It is America's pastime. It is a game that reaches across all ethnographic backgrounds and socioeconomic backgrounds, for that matter. And it seems to be a game that just really has no end in sight. I think the game's more popular than ever, and it will just continue to grow in popularity.
You know, the UIGEA put a little bit of a damper on the online scene. So the United States, the boom has somewhat plateaued. I think that's about to be reversed by legislation that Barney Frank and the PPA folks are doing such a splendid job of pushing through Congress. But in the rest of the world right now, the boom is mushrooming. Europe, South America, East Asia, Australia, you know, all of these folks have put together poker tours that are very active, and you know, just more and more people playing all the time.
You play a lot online. I know I've seen you quite a bit. How much are you playing live, and where do you plan on taking the game personally?
I used to cover the tournament scene for the New York Times, but I switched over to Card Player to write this history. And since then, I only play about three or four live tournaments a year. I play on Full Tilt 6 or 7 or 8 hours a day, just about every day. But I keep the stakes that I play at are pretty low. So I still make most of my living playing, teaching, writing. I teach a poker course, and so that's my main source of income.
Well, and you know, I think for a lot of people out there, keeping poker as a hobby is a way to ensure long-term success. I think, you know, I've seen a lot of people come through, you know, and finish as high as you did in a big tournament and decide that they're going to go pro. And a couple of years later, boy, that, you know, they wish they hadn't given up their day job.
Yeah, the temptation is certainly there. You know, in 2000, I won $250K. It seemed like I got a gigantic amount of money at the time. But, of course, you can't retire on anything resembling that after taxes. And, you know, I got four kids and I got a mortgage, and the spikiness of poker income, at least for me. You know, I know some people do extremely well at it, but I don't think I have the chops to become a poker pro, and the inclination to I want to write books and teach as well.
What else are you working on right now? I mean, obviously this had to take a couple of years of effort. Just the research alone had to just be an enormous undertaking. But what do you got on the horizon?
I'm working on a novel about a poker tournament in Las Vegas, and during the tournament, a lot of people are scared away from participating because there's been a targeting of the city by the Al-Qaeda, our pals from Al-Qaeda. And so that's, I think of it as book three of the trilogy. Positively Fifth Street is a memoir. Cowboys Full is a history of poker, and now I'm going to try. I spent 15, 20 years being a fiction writer. Now I'm going back to writing a novel.
Here's my theory. Phil Hellmuth has actually hired Al-Qaeda to intimidate everyone from coming to play in the tournament so that he can win his 12th bracelet and keep the lead over Doyle and Johnny Chan.
He'll march in with one of those gladiator outfits or maybe his General Patton suit and fight them off single-handedly.
Yeah, I think that's where I would...
But he won't want to take any credit for it. He'll do it all very modestly.
That's where I would go with the story, Jim.
Phil will definitely be in this novel.
What about me? How much can I pay?
Well, there's the thin, tall, thin Phil, and then there's the other tall.
I'm telling you, I can make a little transfer to you on Full Tilt right now for one mention in passing in the novel that I'm sure is going to go down in poker history as one of the greatest.
I was right there when you arrived in, what year was that, 2003, when you and Phil and Mattisau were at the final table.
2001, but
2001. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been a good thing. It's been a wild ride. You know, the Full Tilt team, Full Tilt, has been a spectacular success, and I'm very happy to be a small part of that. And it's been a good thing for a lot of people.
So you've looked back at the history of poker. You wrote a great book. What history do you think will come out in the next 5 years that you could predict writing about?
Put your crystal ball on.
I'm very optimistic about getting the UIGEA repealed and replaced with a law that will regulate and tax the industry. I don't know if I'm being naively optimistic. You know, John Pappas and Barney Frank and Al D'Amato seem to have been very effective over the last couple of years, and I'm hopeful that this year. During 2010, they'll get that done, and at that point, I see the virtual world of poker being a natural extension, a 21st century version of the game that was played on riverboats and kitchen tables, and I think a huge percentage of poker is going to be online, and of course, that's going to change the nature of the game, the ability to read faces and bodies for information is going to more or less disappear, except for in live tournaments. And that's going to be like there's going to be a two-track poker world in which most of the action is online, but at the World Series and other major tournaments, people are going to have to actually, you know, get face being looked at and scrutinized, and, you know, you're going to have to camouflage your tells.
You know, it's amazing how big the games have gotten online lately, and I just see that trend continuing. I was talking to Patrick Antonius just about an hour ago, and, you know, we were reviewing some of the hands that he's played against this new unknown guy from Sweden, Isildur One, and, you know, $1.4 million pots.
Yeah, it is amazing. I think, one, it's a testament to how honest people assume the sites are. You're not going to put $700,000 into a pot if you think that the game is rigged, or if the Full Tilt Pro, as Russ Hamilton did, had access to the hole cards.
Allegedly.
That is absolutely
let me help
right
you out there.
And I appreciate that. So one, it's the stakes that are played online testifies to the honesty of the site that those games are played at. And I've heard that in Bobby's room at the Bellagio, that action has dried up to a certain extent, and that most of the high-stakes games are played on Full Tilt.
Yeah. Jim, of all the historical people that you wrote about in your book, who are a couple of them, living or dead, that you'd like to sit down and play a poker game with?
Well, I'd love to play with the current president in the White House. You know, he plays more at my speed. He's not a high-stakes professional poker player. He plays to relax with friends, to extend his network of friends and colleagues. And, you know, it's in 1997, he arrives in Springfield as a state senator, pretty much of a greenhorn, you know, University of Chicago law professor, community organizer, not a natural fit with the other Illinois Pauls that he had to work with, starts a poker game, and successfully breaks the ice, gets to know the people that he has to work with the rest of the week in the legislature, and you know that he in doing that he was very much like Truman and the Roosevelts and Nixon making their way in the world at a poker table. So I would dearly love to play with President Obama.
Well, all you got to do is crash the White House gates and invite yourself to a state
That's
dinner.
Right.
You might be able to get it done.
That's right, and don't think I haven't thought about it.
You know, right, last week I would have said that was impossible. I guess not anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I want to play with Tiger Woods, but I think he's going to be a little busy for a little while.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jim, once again, congratulations on the publication of your book,
thank you so much.
Thank you again for Positively Fifth Street. It continues to be one of my favorites, and I'm sure that this book is going to take its rightful place right alongside of it. I'm looking forward to finishing it up in the next couple of days, but I think you know, I think for our listeners out there, this is a great holiday present. Go ahead and pick up a copy. You can get it in any major bookstore or Amazon or any of the online retailers. Cowboys Full, it's the story of poker by our dear friend Jim McManus. Jim, thanks for joining us, and happy holidays.
Same to you, Phil. See you, Andrew.
See you, Jim.
There you go. There you got it right there. And once again, can't recommend this book highly enough. I think you will definitely get your $30 worth. Wow, 30 bucks.
You go on Amazon, I think it's only 17.
All right, we'll get it online. That'd be the way I would go anyway. So that will wrap up this holiday gift edition of The Poker Edge on ESPN Radio. I'd like to thank our guest, Jim McManus, for joining us. Thank you to Andrew Feldman with the news. As always, thanks to our producer, Sean Wyman. And by the next time we have another podcast, I will be a daddy times two.
Whee!
So until then, for ESPN Radio and The Poker Edge, happy holidays to you and your family. I'm all in and looking forward to getting that little baby out of here. Take care, guys, and talk to you next week.